We're doing the Ein Yaakov. We're holding the second chapter of Bahot, Perek Sheni, Taf Yud Zayin in the Gemara, page Mem Hey in the Ein Yaakov, by the letter Samaches. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan quoted the following: Ki hava mesayim Rabbi Meir Sifra de Iyov. And Rabbi Meir would finish learning the book of Iyov. And we know the work of Iyov, the work of Job, tells us a story about a man who was God-fearing. He was a very good man, and everything was going well for him. He had children, he had finances, he was a philanthropist, he was helping people. And then the book of Iyov tells us how the Satan came before God, Satan came before Hashem, and Hashem told him, have you taken note of Iyov? Have you seen what a fine person he is? And the Satan said, sure, he's a fine person, everything's going well for him. If you harm his wealth, if you harm his assets, you harm his family, let's see if he's so good. Then you'll see how he blasphemes. So God said to the Satan, fine, you could. I give you permission to harm everything he has. So the Satan harms everything, and Iyov doesn't blaspheme. He says, Hashem gave, Hashem took, may Hashem's name be blessed forever. The Satan comes back to God. God says, did you see? You see how he's still faithful? What'd you harm him for? At the end of the day, he's still faithful. It's for nothing that you did everything you did. So the Satan tells Hashem, Or bad or v'chol ha'sholeish yiten bad nafsho. When a person's about to get a smack, he puts his hand in front of his face. We protect one skin with the other skin, because at the end of the day, the thing that's most precious to a person is himself. So you've harmed everything around him, but you haven't harmed him. Yeah, if you'd harm him, if you'd only afflict Iyov personally, then he'd blaspheme. So Hashem told the Satan, okay, I'm giving you permission to do whatever you want to him, whatever bodily harm you want, just don't kill him. He has to stay alive. You could do whatever you want, but he's got to stay alive. So the Satan comes to Iyov, and he makes him, after he's lost all his wealth, he has boils, and at night he has nightmares, and he's got nothing left but a little piece, a shard of earthenware to scratch his boils. And he's sitting there in the blistering heat, and he's just weeping in pain, where whatever he does, he's in pain. Well, the Sultan's decided to give him massive pain, and he does. And his friends come to comfort him, and the rest of the book is the philosophical conversation between Iyov and each friend. Each friend tries to comfort him, and with each friend he tells him, I didn't deserve this. And each friend says, well, maybe you did, and maybe you can't judge God, and maybe you've sinned, and maybe you're not as pious as you think you are. And each one comes with a different claim, and Iyov answers each one's claim, and he's victorious in the argument against each one.
Oh, so he's like defending himself.
He says, yeah, what are you guys telling me? I was righteous, I did right, I didn't deserve this. And he answers back and forth, and he says, if only God would talk to me, I've done nothing wrong to deserve this. I haven't done anything to deserve things to be this bad. And each one tries to give him another explanation, and to each one he answers, and he really wins the debate with each one. The book goes back and forth, each one's speech. And then finally the youngest one who's sitting there, he was silent until the very end, he answers Iyov, and then Hashem himself appears and answers Iyov. And then Iyov gets blessed, and he gets blessed again, he gets his wealth is doubly what it was earlier, and he has more children than he had before, and he gains everything back. So the story of Iyov is really the philosophical difficulty in this world. That on the one hand, God is running the world. On the other hand, good people have it that that's really the discussion between Iyov and his friends, that they try to justify it. And Iyov contras each justification. So when Rabbi Yochanan's quoting, when Rabbi Meir would conclude the book of Iyov, Amar Hachi, he would say the following. Sof Adam Lamut. The end of man is to die. V'sof Behema L'Shchita. And the end for the animal is that it gets slaughtered. Turns out that everyone's on their way to death. Everyone's standing right now, everyone's erect, alive, but they're all headed to one place. They're all on their way to death. They're all on their way to the grave. Now, this comparison, the end of man to the comparison to the end of the animal, really is a comparison that we find throughout Tanakh. We find it, we say it every Shabbos after Mincha, Adamu vehima toshi Hashem. Hashem, you rescue man and animal. So the Navi is comparing man and animal. We find it in Ecclesiastes. Shlomo HaMelech says, Mi yodea ruach ha'adam ha'olai lemala. Who knows the spirit of man? Does it go up? V'ruach ha-beiman, the spirit of the animal, ha-yoredeti lemata la'aretz, that goes down to the earth. He compares the death of man and earth. And in the book of Yonah, at the conclusion of the book, Yonah laments the fact that Nineveh wasn't overturned, and God tells him, you know, that city had a lot of human beings who don't know much, children and animals. They were all supposed to die for the sins of the adults. So again, the Navi compares the humans and the animals in death. So here he says, everyone's going to death. The man, the animal. Ashrei mi shegadal batorah. This is the way most people pronounce this Gemara. Praised is he who grew in Torah. And I think the correct pronunciation is Ashrei mi shegadel betorah, in present. Praised is he who is growing in Torah, in present tense, because the rest of the sentence is also in present tense. V'amalo batorah, and his toil is in Torah. People spend their lives toiling for the physical, and at the end, if people would only remember that at the end they're going to die, just like the animal gets slaughtered, that means that even now they are omdim in the present, they're on their way to death. That's where we're all headed. That's the last stop. So praised is whom? Praised is he who grows in Torah, who's growing in Torah, and his toil, his endeavors are in Torah. Ve'ose nachat ruach liyotziro, and he gives pleasure to the one who fashioned him. Ve'gadel b'shem tov, and grows in a good name. A good name. That's really encompassing. Chazal say that's the crown that covers it all, a good name. If you have a good name, that means that people think you're a good person. If people think you're a good person, chances are you are. Now the stress over here is that you grow in a good name. Because once a person becomes big, then a lot of people will tell him he's a good person. No one stands up to Bush and tells him, you know, you're a this or a that. Everyone tells him you're so nice. The most vicious king, people tell him you're merciful. Because right now he's in power, so everyone treats him nicely. So the stress over here is that he is gadel b'shem tov, he is growing in a good name. The fact that after he's a big shot, be it a big shot politically, be it a big shot financially, be it someone who's big in Torah, the fact that then he has a good name, that doesn't prove that he really had a good name. The stress is, does he grow with a good name? V'niftar b'shem tov min ha'olam, and he passes from the world with a good name. Because a lot of people, so long as they're around, people speak nicely about them. There was once a funeral of a really, really cruel guy. And in the middle of the funeral, different things happened and people were cracking up. And you could see that, like one person said, as we were walking out of the funeral, one person said, I bet you half the people here came just to make sure he's being put down under. Yeah, so long as he was alive, people were scared of him. He had a lot of assets, and he wielded them against people. But when he passed away, no one was saying anything good about him. I mean, maybe the people who were paid to eulogize him, but you heard people talking in the crowd. It was like, So his stress is, praised is he who grows and is growing in Torah, is toiling in Torah. And these are two different points. Because sometimes a person grows and he doesn't toil. It comes easy to him. Sometimes a person toils and he doesn't grow. So he tells you both. Meaning, so we sometimes feel like the essence is, did I get there? And in Torah we say no. The essence is, are you growing? Are you toiling? Will you get there? You gotta try. And he's giving nachas. His creator has pleasure from him. V'gadel b'shem tov, and he keeps growing in his good name. So the first day he knew this much. The next day he knows a little bit more. V'niftal b'shem tov min ha'olam. He passes from the world with a good name. V'alav amar Shlomo b'chokhmato. And about such a person, Shlomo Amar said in his wisdom, Tov shem mi shemen tov. A good name is better than good oil. And good oil is representative of all the material things in the world. The yom ha-mavet mi yom ivaledo. And the day of death from the day he was born. So here, it could be that it's a play on words. His name is good if he's made it to the death from the day he was born. Mi yom ivaledo. From the day he was born to the day of his death, he maintained that good name. So this was all a quote from Rabbi Meir. When he'd conclude the book of Eov, this was the bottom line. He'd say, you know, sometimes you could look at all the good things that Eov had in the end, and you'd think, so what's the conclusion of Eov? that at the end of your life, if you have it good, you've had it made. So he comes and stresses, no, that's not the point of Eov. Even though at the end he really had it good physically. God gave him back all the material goods he lost, and God gave him a big family, and he gave him all his honor that he had. But you might think, you know, if at the end you leave this world happy, you see that you've been successful, maybe that's the point. He says, no. The point of the book of Eov is what is the essence. The wealth came, the wealth left, the wealth came again. The point of the book of Eov is not the point of the wealth that returned, but rather that Eov really grew in Torah, grew in a good name, and passed away with a good name. That's the message we're supposed to take away from Eov. It's not so clear what the message of Eov is. You read the book of Eov, and different commentaries explain differently, and it's, remember, it's dealing with the greatest question in religious philosophy. The question of God exists, God created the world, God's running the world. Well, we also see that good people have it bad. How do we reconcile the two? It's a question from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a question the whole book of Eov revolves around. Magala bepumed Rabbi Meir. A gem in the mouth of Rabbi Meir, he'd frequently say the following. Decide with all your heart and all your soul to know my ways. And to be consistent by the doors of my Torah, yom yom, day day. Netzor lishoncha meira uspatecha mitaber mirma. Watch your tongue from saying bad and your lips from speaking deceit. Netzor torati belibcha. Watch my Torah in your heart. Meneged einecha tiye yirati. And opposite your eyes should be my fear. Now let's, okay, we'll finish his sentence. Shmor picha michol chet. Watch your mouth from any sin. And purify and sanctify yourself from any sin, from any blame. And God says, and I'll be with you wherever you go. So what's the precondition for God being with us wherever we go? What did he tell us? Firstly, to know God's ways. Meaning people sometimes say, I'll be extra fervent in keeping this. Well, did you learn it? If you didn't learn it, you can't keep it. So the first step is to know the way, to know the path. So a person has to decide that he's going to know the path. And the way to do that is to be consistent in showing up to learn. To be consistent, to come and learn. Watch the Torah in the heart. If we include the parentheses, so nitzol shuncha miraus patecha mitaber mimau, a person has to watch what he says, just like so to speak, Hashem says, if this vessel is going to be used for pure things, then it must remain pure. So if a person wants to learn Torah and be successful in speaking Torah, so he has to watch his mouth, that it remain pure, that it does positive things. The next thing is that a person watch the Torah in his heart. Meaning, like Chazal teach us, could easily slip away. Even a person that's learned, the Pasuk says in Mishlei, Hataif einecha bo, if you blink an eyelash about it, hataif, like fold over, einecha, your eye, bo, with regard to it, the Torah, veinenu, and it will be gone. Ki aso yaselo chenafayim, kinesho yatus bashamayim, for it'll make itself wings like the eagle in the sky. Torah could easily leave a person. The fact that a person learned throughout his years, if he stops learning, it leaves. There's no guarantee it'll remain. Quite the contrary, there's a guarantee it'll leave. Veneged einecha tiye yirati. And God's fear must be opposite one's eyes constantly. One has to watch one's mouth from any sin. It's not only from speaking badly. We know there are many improper things one can do with the mouth. So one has to watch his mouth. And then to sanctify himself, make himself holy. And God says, then I will be with you wherever you go. We know that in Yavne, there were many great sages. When it came time for the destruction of the temple and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai went out to the emperor and he asked him, what gifts do you want? So one of the gifts he requested was Yavne and its sages. So Yavne was a city that was flourishing with rabbis. So the rabbis in Yavne used to frequently say the following, Ani Beriya, I am a creation, v'chaveri Beriya, and my fellow man is also a creation. They're talking about their fellow man who is not learning Torah. So he's an Am Haaretz. So firstly, we have to recognize God created us both. We're both creatures. Ani minachti ba'ir. My work is in the city. Vehu, and thee, minachto ba'sadeh. His work is out in the field. Ani mashkim l'mlachti. I get up early to do my work. Vehu mashkim l'mlachto. And he gets up early to do his work. Kishem shehu eino mitgadar b'mlachti. Just like he doesn't come and try to grab my work, he doesn't try to tell me, well, I'll take your job. So do I don't go ahead and take his work, his job. And maybe you'll say, you know what? You're doing more than he's doing. We are taught that if one's intent is for heaven, the fact that he's doing less, that doesn't mean that he's less liked before heaven. The Torah tells us there's a sacrifice that costs a lot of money. A person could bring an animal. There's a sacrifice that costs much less money if a person brings birds. And then there's a sacrifice that's really cheap if you bring a flower offering. About each of these sacrifices, the Torah says it is l'reach nichoach. It is for a good smell. And Chazal teach us that the Torah used the exact same terminology for each sacrifice to tell us this concept. Echad amarbe, be it if you give a lot. Echad amamit, or if you give a little. Uvivad sheichven libov shamayim. So long as his intent is for heaven, God says, it doesn't matter to me if you can afford more or less. I don't care if you're the one who brought the animal or brought the flower offering. So this guy paid 500 shekel for his offering. And this guy paid 5 shekel for his offering. But were they both with the intent for heaven? Yes. So then God says, so if all he could afford was 5 shekel, I don't care. That makes no difference to me. The rule is, where was his intent? So the rabbis in Yavne, where they'd see a lot of rabbis around them, they'd have to remind themselves, and they'd frequently say this to themselves, I am God's creation, and he is God's creation. When I see an Am Haaretz, when I see a person who is not learned, I have to remember that he's doing the best he can, and I'm doing the best I can. We both work hard. And at the end of the day, if his intent is for heaven, so the fact that he's done less, well, he's doing what he can. So this is one of my favorite gemaras. Magla vepume de Abaye, a gem in the mouth of Abaye. Abaye used to frequently say, now we have to remember that Abaye came from the family of Eli HaKohen. Abaye himself was a Kohen. And Kohanim would frequently get angry. They were busy with before the temple, they were busy doing the service of Hashem, and they'd be quick to do everything, and they were short-tempered. It was an attribute of Kohanim. So Abaye used to frequently remind himself the following: Le'olam yehe adam arum de'ira. A person should always have cunning to be God-fearing. Something that requires cunning. A person has to work on it. That doesn't come easily. Ma'ane rach, he should respond softly. Abaye would always remind himself, respond softly. Meishiv chema, it brings back anger. Even when a person's angry, if he forces himself not to yell, but to talk calmly, so he'll calm down. People think, let me let my anger go. It's one of the things I hear psychologists say nowadays. I don't get it. The Torah teaches us, no, control your anger. Speak softly, you'll control your anger. That's what Abaye used to always tell himself. I'm a Kohen. My tendency is to be angry, Abaye said. So I always have to remind myself. Be cunning with your being God-fearing. What's part of the cunning? How do you hold yourself back from letting your anger take control of yourself? Speak softly. And that'll bring back your anger. Umdaber shalom imechav v'im kerovav v'im kol adam. And a person must speak peace with his brothers and his relatives and with every person. Even with a non-Jew in the marketplace. A person's responsibility is to be loved above in heaven, and people should like him down below. And he should be accepted by God's creatures. So Abaye always told himself, it's not enough that I'm a God-fearing person, so because I'm so God-fearing and zealous as a Kohen, I'm always going to have a sharp response, and I'm going to be tough with people. This is the law, and stick the letter of the law. No. Abaye kept reminding himself, I have to respond gently. I have to speak peace with my brethren, with my relatives, with any person. And part of the measurement, whether I'm successful in this world or not, is am I loved above and so people think I'm a nice person below. Both. That was what Abai would always remind himself. Amru alav al Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, they used to say about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, shelo yikdimo adam shalom meolam, no one would ever be first to greet him with peace. He'd always greet the other guy first. Afilu uved kochavim bashuk, even if it was a Gentile in the marketplace. If he saw his neighbor in the marketplace, even if it was Joe, the guy, he wasn't Jewish, doesn't matter. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would greet him first. Magala bepume de Rava. Rava used to say the following gem. Again, Rava was also a Kohen, also from the family of Eli. And Rava would say the following. Tachlit chokhmah, the essence of wisdom, tshuva u'masim tovim. When a person repents, the essence of Torah is that together with Torah, a person repents, because a person is always going to fall. So the essence is that he keeps coming back, and he does good deeds. You shouldn't have a situation where a person's learning Torah, learning Mishnah, and he kicks his parents, or his Rebbe, or someone who's bigger than him, either in wisdom or in age. As the Pasuk says, the first step of wisdom is Yirat Hashem, being a God-fearing person. They have good wisdom, those who perform this, and their praise will stand forever. Lelomdehem lo nemar, it doesn't say the praise of those who learn the Torah, ela leosehem, to those who do the Torah. The Torah is to be done. To be done means to do tshuva, to do good deeds. Lose lishma, velo laose shelo lishma, to he who does for the sake of heaven, in which case his actions will reflect what he learns, and not to he who does not for the sake of heaven. Rava concludes and says, and if someone does not for the real sake, then it would be better if they were never created. And here Tosus tells us what he's saying here is, if someone's learning not for the sake of performance, but rather for the sake to be the type of person who kicks his parents, kicks his teachers, meaning he's learning just so that he could push everyone off, to tell everyone what to do. Well, I learned you got to do this, and I learned you got to do that. He wants to be a busybody. He wants to boss everyone around. If that's why he's learning, better that he were never created. That's what Rava was saying here. So, if one is learning and he's not learning for the greatest reason, we say, that's fine, it'll evolve. Quite the contrary, our sages taught us, even if you're not learning for the right reason, learn. Because ultimately, Torah will get you to learn for the right reason. Mitoch shelo lishma balishma. From the wrong intent, you'll evolve to the right intent. That's provided that the wrong intent is not harmful like this. It's not an intent to be a person who's going to be nasty to people, telling everyone what to do. If that's the wrong intent, then better the person were never created.
How does Torah go to a person like that? I mean, how does
Torah? Well, so I always say that from this Gemara and other Gemaras, we see that a person could know a tremendous amount of Torah and be a vile person.
Right. So how come it's like that? I mean, isn't Torah study and it seems like now it's just learn and that's it.
So he won't attain the greatest amounts of knowledge. He won't get to the top levels, but certain levels he'll be able to conquer. And to a guy like us, we won't be able to tell the difference. Mm-hmm. Chazal said, when you're choosing a Rebbe, first look at his traits, see if he's a good person or a bad person. So I said this to the guys many times. From here, you see that there could be a person who knows much more than you, and you'd consider him your Rebbe. But Chazal said, before you choose him, and here we each have a responsibility, so to speak, to gauge the Rabbi, is he a nice person or not? Is he a good person to people or not? And if we feel not, so we don't have to go around speaking badly about him. But that's reason enough that Chazal said, don't learn by him. Chazal said, from your perspective, you're right. You don't have a right to badmouth him afterwards. But you do have the responsibility not to take him on as your Rebbe. So, Yahweh, Korach. You have many examples in Tanakh. Korach learned Torah.
He's here, right in front of me. I see people who are going to some rabbis. Obviously, I'm not going to mention names, but I don't know. Isn't some of these rabbis that are supposed to be so great rabbis? And I see the way they talk to some of the students, and I'm like pushing over, like, I don't know, like someone new would hear this, they would run away from Torah.
I don't know. I mean, sometimes you have to know the whole picture. Sometimes it's part of educating a student. I mean, a guy was beating his wife. So he came to his Rebbe and said, I want to talk to you. So the Rebbe said, I don't want to talk to you. What do you mean? A guy who behaves like that to his wife, don't talk to me in learning. First learn to be a human being. Don't come and ask me questions about learning. First ask yourself if you know how to learn. So someone else who would just hear that would say, well, maybe he's distancing him from learning. But if you don't have the whole picture, so you just hear the corner, the edge of it. I mean, there are all kinds of stories. If you just have that part of the story, and I once had a guy who came to me, and he was a thief. He came to learn, and he'd go to stores and shoplift. Like, literally. So he once came and started asking me questions. So I said, we have nothing to talk about. So he said, why don't we have what to talk about? So I said, because you got to go make money now. So he asked me, what do I have to make money for? He said, yeah. I said, you have to prepare to post bail. We shouldn't talk in learning. Go make money, because you're going to end up in prison pretty soon. So you got to have money to post bail. We shouldn't talk in learning. You don't want to sit in jail for too long, so prepare your money. So if someone would overhear that conversation, he'd think, why is he answering him that way? But I know that someone had to talk to this kid, and I spoke to his parents, and they weren't telling him anything. Now, I was his Rebbe, so I felt my responsibility is to get it through to the kid that if he keeps going the path he's going, all the Torah he's learning is not what's going to get him anywhere. He can't learn Torah and at the same time be shoplifting. It's not going to work. So the only way I felt maybe it would hit home after trying many different avenues was to tell him, don't talk to me in Torah. We can't talk Torah. You want professional help? We'll get whatever help you want. You got to get help. You can't continue going the way you're going. And a kid walks into stores. Store owners were coming to me, and they were telling me, you should know, we're going to call the cops on this kid. Even though he's Jewish and we're Jewish, we are going to call the cops on this kid because he's shoplifting, and we've caught him more than once. So they talked to the kid, and I talked to the kid, and they talked to the parents, and I talked to the parents, and it's not going anywhere. At some point, you got to shake the kid up. So, okay, yeah, but I'm saying you can't always judge a conversation. I don't know what was going on. I'm just saying sometimes you have to know the background to the conversation.
No, I've seen it a couple of times from the same rabbi where, like, I don't know, just being, not just, it just seems like, it's not a nice way of answering something.
There are also styles. I mean,
yeah.
There are styles which to some people...
I think that could be the thing. I think that I don't listen to them enough, I don't go to yours enough. I think that might be... Part of his style.
There were rabbis who their style was, and this got the guys going.
But I don't know, because if I walked in and I was fresh, I just started learning Torah, I would get scared. I would run away.
Yeah, but maybe other people, this is what they have to hear. Yeah. I mean, the rabbis who speak about perdition all the time, and they're always like this and that and all kinds of things into their crowd. That's what gets them moving. I'll give you an example. If I started class with, listen, you guys got to listen now. I don't know, I think most Westerners would be turned off. Mm-hmm. If I told you guys, what'd you tell me what to do? I came here to listen. You're going to tell me to listen? That's I think, the initial reaction of a Westerner. But I spoke to someone who comes from a different culture, and he told me that in his culture, They you can't get a class going if you don't tell the audience, listen. He was from a certain part of Russia. He told me that by them they had lectures. They were taught. Part of their... He's an actor. He's a director in movies. And he was taught, like, how do you get your cast to listen to you? So he had classes on how to get them to listen. And one of the things in that part of Russia, one of the things they said is, you have to know that some crowds, you have to begin a speech by saying, listen. And other crowds, you got to begin by saying, look here. Don't even, they have a whole psychology behind how to talk to a crowd to get them to listen. I think neither one would work with us Americans or Canadians or Frenchmen. Okay, I mean, there was also a rabbi who was famous, I shouldn't say infamous, who was famous for dashing out students in America. He was one of the famous rabbis of America, and that was his shita and how to educate students. Whether it was right or wrong, I'm not one to judge, but he was known for it. I mean,
Yeah, no, I mean, that would just walk out.
That's the way we are.
Yeah, right.
But you got to know the lingo also. I see it also.
Well, it's obvious, like, he's obviously doing something right, because this is a very popular Rav, and people are filling this class. But when most of the times he seems to be nice, and then there's times when I'm watching him and he's like really rude. Like, really?
Yeah,
like, not rude, but the way he's answering, like, what, you don't know this? Don't ask me questions
anymore. Oh, so
I'll
tell you stories. Guys would come to Rav Avraham Shapiro Zatzal and ask him a question. And he would ask him, how much have you learned so far of the Masechta of the Yeshiva? And the guy would say, well, 1.5 pages. So he'd say, we're 2 months into the learning. You've only done 1.5 pages? Don't ask me a question. You finish 5 pages, then come back to me. He wanted to get the base medrash moving. When I came to Rav Halberstam Zatzal, numerous times he kicked me out of his office. Literally kicked me out. I asked him certain questions and he'd say, Postemaises, guy gesundheit, guy, you're asking me silly things, go and be well. And then he'd say, but before you go, you know what it means, guy gesundheit? So I'd say, I think so. So he said, so remember to be well, but go. He'd kick me out of his office. I don't know how many times I was kicked out of his office. I asked him questions which to me were serious questions, and still today I think they're serious questions. And he felt like, don't waste my time with this. I asked him questions which maybe he felt like they'd been discussed already many, many times. But I'm still young. To me, it's still new. Kicked me out of his office. But you see, I always came back, not only me. Sometimes the status that a person has allows them also to speak a certain way. Okay, in the eyes of the listener, meaning if someone else would kick me out of his office, I might not ever come back. Yeah. But by him, you see, I did. So there's that's an issue also. And there's also style. He told me prostomysis many times. Where I come from, prostomysis means you're talking filthy. And I was so embarrassed. Like, he's saying in front of the other people in the room, you're talking filthy. I didn't know what I had said wrong. Like, here I am, I'm coming asking a question, and he's telling me prostomysis. So one time he saw that I was really hurt. He said to me, prostomysis. And I said, I didn't say anything, but he saw I was hurt. So he said, do you know what prostomysis means? So I said, no. Figured, let's see what he says. So he said, it means you're asking me something obvious. It means this is simple. So, okay, that's not, from the U.S., where I grew up, that's not the way the term was used. Where he came from, that's how he meant. A difference in lingo made a difference. Yeah, it's a little hard to judge. We got to do ours. Okay. Here. We're up to page Membad. There you go. It's over here. Gem in the mouth of Rav. This world is not like the world to come, or the world to come is not like this world. The world to come, in there's no eating or drinking. No procreating. No business. No jealousy. No hatred. Nor any competition. But rather the righteous are sitting and their crowns are on their head, and they enjoy the glory of, or the shine of the Shechina. As the verse says, they saw God and they ate and they drank. So all of this needs work. Next time we'll pick up over here with the Rambam on this, that the Rambam breaks down each word. What does it mean they're sitting? What does it mean the crowns are on their head? Doesn't mean they enjoyed the ziva of the Shechina. So that's where we'll have to pick up next time.